This is Bragg, son of Balin, and you're listening to Light the Beacons, a LOTRO podcast. Welcome to the world of Middle-earth.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Light the Beacons, a LOTRO podcast focusing on the lorific MMO, Lord of the Rings Online, as well as related topics in books, movies, gaming, and the lore of J.R.R. Tolkien. This is episode number 4, and I'm your host, Bragg of the Lonely Mountain, Thane of Hitbolt, and Dwarf of Ill Repute. Excited to be here with you again. I want to thank all my viewers for joining in, and yes, I know that technically, you're not viewers, at least I think you're not viewers, but I shamelessly stole that gag from a favorite podcast of mine called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. I recommend you check it out. Going forward, I shall use it exclusively. Hey, if you can't create, then you should plagiarize, right? Well, we better get on with it. There is so much time and so little to do, so let's light our first beacon. Amandine. Well, let's review our agenda for this week. First of all, I'd like to make some corrections from last week's podcast. At one point, I was discussing my new pet shrew that I had earned through the Spring Festival and was lamenting that I could not figure out how to rename him by right-clicking on his portrait like I could as an LM or a captain or with mounts and so forth. Luckily for me, one of my viewers wrote in, Tomi Yorick, who pointed out that if you use the command slash CPET, CPET, standing for cosmetic pet, I assume, then space rename, and then space in the name that you want to use, you can rename your pet. So CPET, space rename, space Stompers, and now I have a shrew named Stompers. Thank you, Tomi Yorick. Really appreciate it. You made my day. I've also gotten some feedback from some folks listening to the podcast mentioning that sound levels could be adjusted, especially on the intro. I know my intro is only recorded right now in one stereo channel, so that's something I corrected on the main podcast. Have not gotten back and re-recorded the intro yet. We'll hope to do that going forward at a time TBD, but you'll be the first to know when it happens. So, in this week's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about what we've been doing in-game, like overheating. We're going to discuss the ups and downs of Hitbold, which should be an interesting one. I know there's a lot of split opinions about Hitbold in the game. It's been much discussed. We're going to do another LOTRO quest highlight, this time going old school. To the delight of champions everywhere, we are going to discuss the wonders of AoE in our combat mechanics review. And lastly, we will discuss the negative side of the new LOTRO Bjorning class being based on a Danish professional golfer named Tommy. As ever, there's much to talk about, so let's light our second beacon. Okay, so this week in LOTRO, what have we been doing? Well, unfortunately, the answer is not a lot. We have been experiencing an issue with the cooling fan in my computer giving out, and it's working okay for normal operation, but as soon as I fire up any kind of game with any kind of advanced graphics, the graphic card quickly heats the PC to the point where I get an automatic shutdown. So I'm going to have to take a look at getting that replaced over the coming week. I found that historically my graphic card has run hot, hotter than it seems like it should. I've always been able to control it previously through the use of a cooling pad. The one I purchased was a Belkin, and I do recommend it. Had it for several years now, and it's still running, and did the job as far as keeping the PC comfortably running, but this Having the fan fail completely is another matter, so hopefully we'll get that addressed soon. However, I was able to play a little bit prior to experiencing that technical difficulty, progressing my LM through the epic battles for the epic quest line. One thing I noticed this week, I'm sure others have run to as well, is when working through the phasing of Helm's Deep, when we go into the sunrise section, you know, after the night's battles where you've survived the dawn and are ready to ride out from the center of Helm's Deep and make the final charge. As you're running around inside the instance of Helm's Deep, there are, unfortunately, the bodies of the Rohirrim laid out across the pavement in many areas, you know, with various NPCs, you know, crying and wailing over them and gnashing their teeth and so forth. And it is really sad, and it's impactful. It's important that, you know, Turbine showed the aftermath of the battle and brought home the reality of how many valiant defenders lost their lives. However, I have to remark that the placement of the bodies is somewhat unfortunate. I guess I could dismount and walk around, but, I'm usually in a hurrying game. I'm usually on my mount, on my war steed. You know, the controls are not so fine, and, you know, I typically find that I'm riding over the tops of the dead Rohirrim, and that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. I don't know if you guys are... I know you've run into this. Come on, admit it. So, first of all, as you're running over the dead bodies of the Rohirrim laid out on the Helm's Deep floor, your horse kind of bounces up and down like it's going over a series of speed bumps. And I can't help but be somewhat... what's the proper word? I find some humor in it, unfortunately. I know it's a sad situation, but the first time I did it, I think I had someone who was watching me play, and we spent a couple minutes riding back and forth, bumping up and down over the little corpses on the ground and kind of laughing ourselves hysterically. So maybe I'm not treating the moment with the proper, you know, respect that it deserves, but I know you guys have run into this. Come on. Who is stepping off their horse so they can walk around the bodies and spending the additional time to do that? Maybe you are. Maybe it's just me. Anyway, the humming is speed bumps is, definitely an attraction in the game. I will have to say, as I go through the phasing of the battles in Helm's Deep again, I do appreciate what Turbine has done here to represent the different stages of the battle. Probably, there might have been a better solution than out there, but this one's pretty good. It was implementable. It works. It lets you experience the decisive moments, the inflection points of the battle and so forth from the lore. So they've done a good job with it. But I have to say the downside is there's still confusion in GLFF constantly. People calling out, Quest tells me I have to go talk to Gandalf, can't find him, and invariably have to reply back and say, go find Glowvine in Helm's Deep, click on After Sunrise, ride out to the field, then you'll find Gandalf and get back. So, you know, I think most of the players are caught on, but, you know, obviously everyone new that gets to it, there's enough chatter in the Unite channels on Vilya. I'm sure it's common to some of the other servers as well that there's obviously still points of confusion regarding that. So besides that, I was cleaning up Edoras on my hunter, who's level 88 now. I do continue to enjoy the quests around Edoras, helping prepare the Rohirrim for the departure to Dun Harrow and assisting Eowyn. So, you know, a couple quests I'll throw out there. Helping find the little girl who's doesn't want to leave the fox alone in the woods is cute. I like that quest line. I think it's an interesting story. Earning a new home in Edoras by, deciding between two descendants who are fighting over their father's inheritance. Definitely interesting the first time I did that one. It's a different kind of quest. It involves a couple different stages, a good story. You know, through repetition, it's getting a little old, but that one was well done. And lastly, one that I think is probably less popular because I know as much as some people enjoy fishing, there are others that don't in the game just as much. But there's the quest where you find the lonely fisherman out on the docks and you're trying to persuade him to leave the city. And, I feel like it's a touching moment. He says, I'm happy to leave if you'll just sit here and keep me company for a few minutes and, you know, one last fish off the docks, you know, as it's kind of like, you know, as the band is playing on the Titanic, as the ship is sinking around him. But, you know, I sat there and I fished with the old man, and it's kind of a quiet moment, and you kind of understand the impact of, you know, the battles raging all across, you know, the country on some of these insignificant, you know, citizens who are just trying to live their lives. So I think that was well done too. And as I was sitting there fishing, there was a beautiful purple sunset in the background, and I caught the light of the full moon reflecting on the water and got some really neat screenshots. So a touching moment around Edoras with my hunter. She should be departing for Dunharrow soon to deal with some of the preparations there. And I'll be looking forward to moving her through the storyline and hopefully earning some of those elusive class trait points. So that's enough about what we did this week in LOTRO. Hopefully we'll be returning to the game next week. And let's move on to our third beacon. Nardal. So this week in Nardal, I want to talk about Hitbolt. Hitbolt is, you know, I think an interesting inflection point, there's that word again, in the game, in the advancement of, you know, what is considered end game for LOTRO. And I thought there were some really positive things that were done in the implementation of Hitbolt, and there were some problematic things that were done. So I want to talk a little bit about each of those, and then we'll see if Bragg can fix LOTRO at the end. So, you know, Hitbolt represents what I call the quandary of endgame, or you know, the engaging of daily tasks. So, as we all know, those of us that play MMOs, we've learned that there is a need to keep players engaged between content updates, and you know, one mechanism for doing that is obviously the publishing of a raid cluster. Another mechanism for doing that is to create a series of daily tasks that the people can log into to make progress against, you know, certain achievements, whether it's earning reputation in order to gain access to gated content, or to earn raid level armor so that they're prepared for raid clusters that might come down the pike, or you know, for various other goals. So, you know, this is not a problem that's unique to LOTRO. Players consume content way faster than developers can ever keep up with it. And so the developers are faced with a series of probably unenviable choices that need to be made around how they can keep the players engaged until the next content update is released. And different game developers have treated this in different ways. Some have gone to releasing small snippets of content regularly so that, you know, every week to 2 weeks, there's something new going on, even if it's small, to keep players engaged. You know, that is a movement away from major expansions, which I think are becoming less prevalent in the industry, to these smaller content updates. And it appears that LOTRO is following in the footsteps of that to some degree. But I want to say that Hitbolt was a different solution, a new solution for trying to keep their players busy in the end game, and I want to properly give out kudos to Turbine for trying something new in this regard. Whether or not it was received well, I think it, you know, has reflected choices they've made recently to try different things. You know, they are experiments. Some of them have gone well, some of them have not gone well, some of them have been received well, and some of them have been not received well. But I think it goes to show the difficulty of trying to please all the different, you know, gamut of players that are engaged in MMOs, you know, that all are enjoying the game in different ways. However, you know, kudos to Turbine for trying something new, but let's not forget why players grind in the game. You know, most MMO players have shown an ability to, you know, either an inclination or ability to put up with grinding in the game. Why do players grind? Typically, in my experience, I grind at least because I want my gear to be better so that I can do top-level instances either comfortably, you know, sure of my contribution, or even, you know, getting my player, my tune to a point where they can help make up for shortfalls in my fellowship, you know, so that we can succeed where otherwise we might not. So a lot of players that I know grind because they want the gear and the, you know, the character capabilities, to improve, to be able to do instances. So when players don't have when players don't have anything to aspire to in growing their character skills, that's when it kills motivation. So I think that's, you know, a lot of the complaints we're hearing now about the fact that there is no raid cluster currently being planned or worked on, which means, you know, inevitably, you know, the introduction of new instances are at least 6 to 9 months off. So a lot of players are saying, why should I grind a Fangorn daily when, you know, in order to get the Uber Shield of Uberness, when I don't even need to do it to do any of the content that's out there. There's nothing that's challenging enough that, you know, nothing new and challenging enough that requires that I have the Uber gear from the Fangorn instances. So why should I grind Fangorn dailies every day for weeks? So that's kind of the quandary that players are facing right now as they look through the endgame content that's available. But let's go specifically to Hypebold. Let's talk about what I think worked well in Hypebold. First of all, have to give plaudits for the fact that the quest selection for Hypebold was huge. 49 different, you know, around, I think I counted them up roughly, 48 or 49 different quests to choose from. They had 4 different quest hubs. Each of them had between, I think, 10 and 14 different quests that could be available on any given day. I think you would get 4 out of the pool of, let's say, 11 or 12 in each quest hub. And each day you went back, there might be a different selection. But overall, over 49 quests to choose from, including what I would call roughly 16 solo instances, you know, spaces created specifically in the game, you know, for the Hypebold questing, you know, some new physical spaces or instances set in existing spaces in the towns with different objectives and so forth. You know, that amounted to basically solo instances that could be played. You know, I think this was really positive. As far as endgame dailies, this was the most variety I'd ever seen produced for this kind of function in a game. And I think that went a long way in keeping it fresh for the people that that did it or did enjoy it. You know, the ability to earn raid level armor for your main characters, you know, using the grind from Hypebold to be able to do so, as opposed to going through Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 of the Erebor raids. I think it was a popular, you know, it was a popular avenue for players to follow. The Hypebold gear was pretty good. The raid gear was better, but, you know, not leaps and bounds more. So, you know, the Hypebold guild was perfectly suitable, especially for getting into the Erebor raids. A lot of people availed themselves of that. And one of the best decisions that that Turbine made in this, which I think was wonderful, was the ability for, once your main character finished Hypebold, not to just earn his own armor, but to earn armor for your alts. So this is something, this is the first time I'd seen this done, and I applaud the decision. I really hope they look at this going forward in other ways. You know, I think this is a precept that could have been applied to epic battles for Helm's Deep to some effect. So by allowing your main character that finished Hypebold to not just acquire armor for himself, but also for your alts, it prevents you having, for those of us who have alts, from having to take your tunes. You know, the only thing I could think of that would be worse than grinding Hypebold to rebuild it would be having to do it for 3 or 4 or 5 different alts to get the armor. Never would have attempted that. So the fact that you can do it once and then provision your other characters was a great decision, one I'd like to see them implement more. If I could earn ranks in epic battles with my main character that could then be used on my alts, or if I could earn epic battle trait points by running epic battles from any alt as opposed to one, I think that would be a wonderful evolution to the game to allow variety and choice. So that was really well done. I also liked the provision of the crafting instances that opened up as you opened up Hypebold. 3 more instances on top of the 16 solos that were available previously. The whole story behind the rebirth of the town and the tie-in to the story of the region was very well done. I thought, from my perspective, I thought it was a heroic undertaking, and tied in really to the stories that were woven throughout the region. So I think those are the positive points of Hypebold, and just for the heck of it, I'll name five of my favorite quests among all those that were available. The first one is controversial, the Beacon of Yoworth. I actually enjoyed the Beacon of Yoworth, and again, I know a lot of the viewers out there, you may not be viewers, but I know a lot of you viewers did not. I know a lot of people that avoided the platforming concepts at any choice, but I actually did enjoy it. I got good at it with my characters, and I found that I could get it done more quickly than most of the other tasks that were available. So that's why I often chose it as an option. And you know, through practice, got it down to pretty good ratio of success on the Beacon of Yoworth. And of course, for those who know, if you're a captain and you get to the beacon, it's obligatory to make a call out to invite others up there that might be interested. So be polite to your fellow players and summon them when you can. Okay, second, the Hobby Horse quest. Wonderfully done. What a great surprise. Really fun. Until they ruined it by trying to sell it for $50 to any sucker in the store. Hopefully they learned their lesson on that. I did like the series of quests in the area called the Dwergfant, as best as I can pronounce it. I think it was a dwarven rune that basically was a waterworks. Thought there was cool scenery in there with all the Avanks running around and the different pools that turned to acid as you adjusted the different levers. Thought that was well done. There was an area called Digalon where you would go through and find giant lizards feasting on the fungus, where I thought the animation of the different lichens and glow-in-the-dark funguses around the caves were really beautiful. And I've seen them done in a few other places around Rohan. It seems like they found some new tech for making those kind of glow and come to life, and really like that setting. And then lastly, I'll put a tie-in for the fifth. There's a quest called the Ford Defiled Ruins, where it's the part of Eastern Rohan where the Dunlendings are from the far east are massing on the border to attack Rohan, that is described in the epic quest line, and you kind of walk through their camp and you have to pick up the runes that are left by the Black Riders that are striding around the camp. And the little Black Riders are kind of like running around, dropping little loads everywhere. You kind of follow them, sweep up after. I kind of felt like the guy at the circus parade, you know, following the elephants with the broom as I ran after the little guys. But actually, that instance was well done and actually had an element of danger in that if you ran into one of the Black Riders because you weren't paying attention, you were killed and sent back to the entrance. And it happened to me quite a few times, I have to admit. And the last one I'll mention is the Ent Walk, where you were walking through the woods and you had to collect the little creatures. And if you ran into the Ents in that instance, they would wipe you out as well. But I thought it was kind of fun that you could collect the four or five little creatures and they'd be trailing you all around until you left the instance. Okay, so now that we've talked about the positive points of Hitbolt, let's go into what doesn't work, for me at least, in terms of the way it was implemented. Number one, far and away, 40, I believe the calculation I did, I could be wrong on this, but I believe it's 43 straight days of daily quests required in order to be able to complete the Hitbolt rebuild and get your full set of armor. 43 straight days of doing... aiding the Easton Mint, five quests where you, even if you wiped out four in one hub, you had to travel to a new hub to do one. And plus you had to do another 4 days for each alt that you wanted to outfit when you were finished as far as generating the coins for that. So, you know, even with the selection they gave you to choose from, 43 straight days of dailies, that's a grind. It was a big one. You know, the fact that they gave you the variety helped, but it's too long. It's just too long. You know, I was in there most days doing the daily. There weren't too many days I missed. So, but, you know, basically was at it for almost 2 months at least. And, you know, there are other ways, other things I like to do in game. You know, this was a good chunk of time. Maybe you can get them done in... If you had it down to a science, maybe 20 or 30 minutes to run them all. But still, what a sink. So, didn't enjoy that. Thought it was too long. Secondly, I would blame what I'd call the impenetrable murk of understanding the process to rebuild the town. As far as how it was uncovered, figuring out what quests became available based on your reputation, based on, you know, what quest lines you needed to finish in order to earn certain armor pieces. You know, if a player-provided guide had not been generated to talk about the whole process and how to do it, it would have been, you know, inaccessible for a majority of players. So, you know, the fact that a player guide was really necessary in order to be able to do this fully, I think doesn't speak well to its implementation. And I can talk a little bit about what I think could have been done to improve that. Lastly, I found the layout of the town to be, you know, I thought they did a good job in Rohan of realizing that people are going to be, it's a horse culture, right? People ride horses through the towns to make big wide alleys with sweeping curves so that as you're coming through, even on a war steed, for the most part, you know, unless you were lagging, you could ride through a town through the main thoroughfares pretty easily overall, and it was generally fun to be able to do so if you weren't lagging. You know, they actually had it down pretty well. Most of the towns where you could kind of curve through there to your destination and kind of steer it. You know, it's kind of like steering a boat almost rather than a horse, but it's still doable, and it's fun when it works. But I thought Hitbolt, you know, some of the avenues were too tightly packed. I stomped all over that town. You know, every time I tried to stop, I was running over fences and getting caught in corners and things of that nature. So, you know, that's one negative. And the other thing they did in Rohan, which I thought was a pain, for a horse-driven culture, the one thing that they did on every gate for every town is to have those logs sticking out on either side. I basically call them horse catchers. Because if you were coming in at an angle and you missed, you got stuck and you had to back up and slide to the side and then go in. I can't tell you how many times I got caught on the horse catchers coming into towns. No matter how good I got at it, you know, based on the lag, it was always happening. So the layout of the town was a problem. And lastly, I think it never became a hub for players as they might have intended it to, because they never added a vault or auction house to the space. You know, they had almost everything else there that you could want to make it a player hub, except for a vault or auction house. And they seemed to resist every player entreaty to add those functions there. I think Hitbolt could have been a center hub for players and maybe, you know, lighten the traffic in Snowborn if they had added those features. There was an LI Forge Master and Relic Master in the town, but they were a little inaccessible up by where the crafting instances were ensconced. So, you know, I thought that was just a missed opportunity. Why make it difficult for players to have to run back and forth between the two when you know they're grinding there for at least 43 straight days on a daily basis? Why not give them the services they need? So I think that could have helped. That was a missed opportunity. So my five worst Hitbolt quests I'll mention while I'm on the downside. Number one, dressage. With or without the map that you could find online to help make this decipherable, it was a mess. Wild horses. I didn't know the trick where you could just place the horse on follow and then plink away if the orc's running after you. So definitely failed that instance a few times. Resupplying the line, of course, I think it was universally hated. Running across the string while the Crabane take pot shots at you out of Eworth. I did do that quest quite a bit, because if you got lucky and got through on the first try, or even the second or third try, it was very quick compared to doing some of the others. So I did do it a number of times. I got decent at it, but still never really liked it. The Creeping Wood was one of those where you had to go through and free the entrapped Rohirrim from the cocoons. But every time you opened up one of the cocoons, you had a chance that it was an orc that would attack you. Plus, there were spiders. I just didn't like the orcs. You know, finding orcs instead of Rohirrim, it seemed random. Sometimes I'd get all orcs, and it would be a pain to finish. And lastly, I'll name the Beacon of Yoworth. Yes, it was one of my favorite quest lines, but if you had a little lag on you that day, a little lag would go a long way in making that quest very frustrating. I do know people have seen people actually climb the Beacon of Yoworth using mounted on their horses, which I thought was pretty impressive. I did try it once myself, gave up after a little bit, and you know, I think would be a great server-wide competition to you know, declare a major prize for anyone that could ride up to the top on their war steed. There's probably people out there that have done it. So if viewers, and I know you're not viewers, but if you're one of the ones out there that rode to the Beacon of Yoworth on your war steed, give me a shout out and I'll mention your name on the next podcast. Lastly, as far as hated quests for Hitbolt goes, I'll give honorable mention to all the fishing quests. I actually don't mind fishing. Did some of the fishing quests. Some of them were a little hard to figure out exactly what was going on, like the bloodfish, the Garsville guppy. Once you figured it out, they weren't too bad, but you know, normally would rather kill stuff. Okay, so here's the part where Bragg fixes Lotro. Some ideas on how this could have been done better. First of all, I would have recommended, you know, if they were going to do a special implementation like Hitbold, if they created a graphic map representation of the town that showed the different sections that needed to be rebuilt and had a graphic that showed kind of your percent complete on those sections, you know, that maybe they were, you know, basically traced, the buildings were traced out, you know, but not filled in. And as you completed quests in each area and turned in the tokens, the buildings, you know, slowly, piece by piece, became kind of rebuilt in the graphic of the map. You know, maybe they could have put little keyed icons on there to show you where you could earn armor pieces depending on your class. I think it would have gone a long way towards creating kind of a cohesive metric that players could have latched onto to understand their progress and how far they'd come and how far they had to go, and you know, a bit more, you know, a bit more guidance on where they should be focusing their time. And secondly, and this is a big one, I think, you know, again, I handed out a kudo to them for enabling your main tune that had rebuilt Hybold to be able to earn armor for your alts. But they could have gone a lot farther by this if they had allowed the ability for tokens of Hitbolt to be earned account-wide so that you could run the instances on any alt that you had and have that count towards your town being rebuilt. So one of the reasons that I got tired of the instances, even though they had 49 to pick from, is because I had to run them on the same character every day. You know, I've got 4 or 5 alts that were close to end cap at that point. If I had been able to run the different instances on my different alts, which could have helped them in leveling or deeding or reputation earning, whatever the case may be, or just to have a different playstyle to switch things up, it would have made all those instances fresh. I could have done it on a different tune every day. Just have the tokens add up account-wide across your tunes. And if once Hitbolt is rebuilt, then have whatever tune you want hand in the final, you know, the final quest to trigger the remainder of the storyline. So I think that would have gone a long way towards keeping the content fresh for a lot of players. And I'd recommend them to think about that going forward for other endgame activities, such as epic battles. What if you earned your class trait points, as I mentioned before, through running epic battles on any tune instead of on one tune? So that to get to rank 9, you didn't have to, you know, you didn't have to rank each individual player by running 50 to 60 battles per player to get them to the high ranks. You could run 50 or 60 battles across all your tunes and achieve rank, you know, and playability and enjoyment and variety a lot easier. So that's my idea on how Bragg fixes Lotro when it comes to Hitbolt end game grind. Let me know what you think of that. And if you have any supplementary ideas or see a hole in my plan, let me know. With that, let's move on to our fourth beacon. Aralos. Now a word from our advertisers. We've got a new sponsor this week. We're a little bit nervous about letting him on the air. The guy's got a screw loose, I gotta say. Those of you who grew up in New York, New Jersey, New England in the mid to late 70s may recognize this sponsor, but for those of you who don't, hold on to your hats. Please give a broad welcome for Crazy Sammy. Hold your horses, friends, because it's Crazy Sammy's Blowout Great Barrel Sale. We've got everything you could possibly need for raiding, and it's all on sale now. We've got relics, runes, a few gold for your tunes, purple items in teal, and even a few seals, starlit crystals and more, anything and everything in crappy gear. Remember, we do not wipe pugs, we will not wipe pugs, we cannot wipe pugs, and we mean it. The best deals in the barrels are at Crazy Sammy's during Crazy Sammy's Blowout Great Barrel Sale. So come kill Crazy Sammy now. With a raid so easy, he's practically giving it all away. Crazy Sammy, his loot is insane. Okay. There you have it. We might have lost a few viewers on that one, and I know you're not viewers, but for those of you who found that amusing, I hope there's at least one or two of you. Let's move on. Remember, podcasting is a great experiment, and you grow stagnant if you don't try new things. So consider that a new thing. But here's an old thing. The fifth beacon. Min Rimon. So, I'd like to do a Lotra quest highlight for this week. I'm going back to old school for a change on the Lotra quest highlight. We've been highlighting quests that I've been running into in the West End net. And I want to go back to one of my favorite quests, all the way back to the Shire. It's called The Spectre of the Black Rider, and it's available for those of you at level 10, starting up new tunes in the Shire. One of my old favorites. It involves an NPC named Odovakar Bulger, who is in the town of Budgeford. And there's lots of strange happenings, of course, going on in the Shire during this point in time, and Odovakar says that there's a strange figure that's been seen at nights down around his pigsties, dressed all in black, and strange folk, queer folk moving about, and he asks if he can go and investigate. So as you, this is one of the quests, actually, early on in the game. They started to get rid of these a little later because I think they didn't like the inconvenience to players, but you could not finish the quest unless you went to look in the evening, and I believe that's still the case for this one, at least. I know some of the others, like Saradin's Rendezvous and so forth, they changed to be any time of day, but as far as this quest is concerned, as you wander down into the pigsties in Lower Budgeford, you find a figure wandering, crying out strange things like, "First Budgeford, then the whole East Farthing. Tomorrow the Shire. Odovakar, I'm coming for you. Ha, ha, ha. These stars are mine. These sties are mine. Fear my wrath, Bulgers of Budgeford." And as you come up and confront the figure, you find, he starts to yell at you, "Cower before me. You will face my wrath. Boo." And then he's unmasked, lets his hood back, and you realize it's a young hobbit youth wandering the pigsties, and he says something to the effect of, "I gotta go. So long." And he runs away. So you have to report back to Odovakar that his assailant or his the strange figure is nothing more than a local prank. And the first time I saw it, I didn't know what was coming and just got a great laugh out of that quest. I thought it was a perfect encapsulation of, kind of the silliness and fun of the Shire and hobbits in general. Still one of my favorites. Okay, with that, let's move on to our last major segment of the podcast, the sixth beacon, Callenhad. Okay, so we're going to advance our topic of combat mechanics of the week. And this week, this is the second in a series on melee skills. If you're a newer player, aside from enjoying the story and scenery, one of the most important things you can do as you level your character is to learn your skills as deeply as you can. Revisit the tooltips for the skill as frequently as possible until you have them memorized. And if the tooltip is vague, as they often are, go out to the forums, if you can, to understand all the skill's effects and how it's typically used. Sometimes it's obvious. The damage done, the power cost, the cooldown, and will come naturally as you build skill rotations in a fight. However, many melee skills have special components that you may or not be aware of. For example, area of effect. So in this tip, we're going to talk about another important component of many combat skills, AOE, area of effect. So it's important to know instinctively when you're in the middle of a fight which skills on your skill bar are single target skills versus multiple target skills, or AoE, area of effect attacks, and to switch between them at the right time, as you burn down a group of mobs, or to avoid breaking crowd control when in fellowships. So let's first talk about AoEs in terms of when soloing. So in the simplest form, understanding which of your attacks are AoE skills versus which are single target is the best way to maximize the damage output against multiple mobs or one-on-one against mobs in the landscape. Whenever I'm facing a group of mobs, obviously I lead with all my AoE skills. And as they winnow down the pack to one or two assailants, I start switching over to the single target skills. Typically, not always, but typically, the single target skills will actually have higher damage output on a single target, and the AoE skills will have a smaller damage output, but against multiple targets. And so when you're working against multiple targets, hitting AoE skills is the best way. You know, in the landscape, let's face it, typically it's a time saver. How quickly can you get through the mobs and, you know, to finish your Slayer deed or to pick up the quest item or whatever the case may be? It's not often that you're going to be actually, you know, in a life-threatening situation, but it can impact the amount of time it takes you to work through content. So knowing when to hit AoE skills as you fight a group of mobs, and then switching over to single target skills as you're down to maybe the last elite boss that you're fighting is important for saving time, and in some cases for a tough fight, for, you know, it could make the difference between surviving or not. It's also important because of, as you're soloing, to avoid unintended aggro of those not in an initial pull. So if you do a ranged pull, let's say there's wanderers in a camp, and you do a ranged pull when the wanderer is not in range, or you engage a target when he's not in range, you know, you can avoid pulling additional targets by avoiding skills that have a large range or that have an AoE effect to the area surrounding the guy that you're fighting. So it can also be important in not pulling in additional mobs into a fight that you don't want to engage yet if it's a dangerous area. And really, when it comes to soloing, those are the two principal things. It's fairly simple. AoE becomes a much more important component when you're grouping, however. Single target attacks are often important to divide mobs, to avoid cross mob effects. So what I'm trying to say by that is to say that there are lots of fights, especially in raids and instances, where when mobs are grouped together, they give each other buffs or debuffs. This also happens frequently in raids or skirmishes. And pulling groups apart from one another, or pulling a mob with a special impact on the mobs around him away from the others in the group, can make the group much easier to burn down. It's akin to using a surgical knife to remove a piece rather than a broadsword. If you're a tank and you're aggroing, you have single target AoE skills and you have, you know, multiple target AoE skills. In some cases, you may want someone in your group to pull a single mob away from the rest of the group for everyone to burn down while the tank engages the rest of the group. But if the target has already deployed a challenge, which is a force taunt, then getting that single target away from everybody else is going to be difficult. So understanding those situations is important. It's also important, for example, if you're with a class that can do stuns, mezzes, and knockdowns like an LM or a burglar, often you can take an important mob out of a fight that has a special attack until you're ready to deal with him. And, a good LM will try to nab a mob before he's, in the middle of the melee so that he won't be impacted by AoE attacks. But it's not always possible. Sometimes those mobs are kind of ingrained in the center of the group or, can't be separated for whatever reason. And if you have a mezzed mob that you have to leave alone, it's important to that fight to make sure that he's not up and impacting the combat, then you've got to use single target attacks to burn down the folks around him rather than AoEs. Because if you hit him with an AoE, you're going to knock him out of his mez. And the LM actually has a little graphical option in his setup that enables what's called combat state notifications. which means that if anyone knocks his target out of Mez through the use of a skill, he's going to get a little line in his log telling him who did it. So they can track you down. They will find you. you know, again, a lot of instances of raids are designed in a way that if a key mob is not mezzed during an important portion of a fight, you will wipe. So it's important not to break mezzes, especially if they're called out by your raid or group leader at the start of a fight. Everyone should know who's being mezzed, where they're going to be mezzed if possible. Yeah, I'm going to try to nail him over by the altar, you know, so that grab the rest of the group and pull them off to the right so that we're not endangering the mezzed mob. Also, it's important, you know, for aggro building. There are AoE and single target aggro skills for a lot of tanks and for a lot of other classes. And, you know, there are also special skills that, let's say, I believe it's the Mini has a skill, and I think some of the other classes do as well. I want to say it's the something of the Valar, where if they hit it, they're guaranteed that their next skill they trigger is going to be a crit. So one way to maximize the effectiveness of that skill is for the next skill to be an AoE heal rather than a single target heal, and you get a guaranteed crit across the whole group. So knowing how you can maximize the effectiveness of that crit by hitting an AoE skill versus a single mob skill, if it's called for, is important. The guard in red line has a skill where his sprint skill, which now will enable, after the sprint skill is used, the next attack the guard uses will produce a knockdown of a mob for 5 or 6 seconds. That's a huge skill. But if you use a single target skill after that and you knock down one mob versus using a whirling retaliation skill that will take out a group of 8 for 5 or 6 seconds, that's a huge difference. So, again, understanding how AoE skills or single target skills can combine with other skills in your repertoire is an important consideration as well. You should know that AoE skills come in several varieties. There are some that are 180-degree target attacks, meaning that everyone from your kind of your flanks forward will get impacted, but maybe not targets that are behind you. And there are skills also that are 360-degree AoE attacks, which will hit targets on all sides. So a good tank will pull a group, try to group it as tightly together as possible through small movements that kind of draw them into each other, and make sure they're all in front of him. But if there is a target that gets behind, you know, hitting your whirling retaliation, which is a 360-degree attack, may enable you to pull aggro off that mob before one of the other members of the Fellowship accidentally gets it. So it's important to understand the area of effect of the AoE attack. That's not always documented on the skill. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. So it's good to experiment with those or look them up online to clarify. So I've already mentioned that healing AoE versus a solo AoE is important. A lot of classes have healing AoE kind of heals over time, which are natural side effects of other attacks, and they need just to make sure that they're within range of other Fellowship party members for them to get impacted. But if you're a healer in a party, you must know which heals you would hit to raise the morale of all in your party versus single target heals for your tank or for Fellowship members that are in trouble. It's absolutely crucial. If you're a debuffing class like a burglar or an LM, knowing which of your debuffs are AoE versus single target, also extremely important. You know, for an LM, fire lore is his bread and butter. You can trade it to impact up to 8 targets, reducing their damage output by up to 30%. You know, it can be huge in grouping, but you've got to know, you know, how many people you're affecting and whether or not that buff contains an aggro component to it, or if it can be done pre-fight without attracting aggro, if you need to wait until the tank grabs aggro before you hit them with the debuff, things of that nature. You know, some of the burglar skills have multiple targets that are debuffed over single targets. You know, important to understand all those things, who you're impacting, you know, and how. There are legacy traits out there that increase the number of AoE targets for certain classes. Almost all the classes have one or two of these. And depending on if it's a skill you use often, that can be one of the most valuable traits to pump up in your legacy. You know, for my guard, I always have additional challenge targets to maximize the number of people I'm pulling with that initial force taunt. You know, you need to be able to grab as many mobs as possible, you know, in a raid or instance in a fight. I also use melee target, number of targets increase. The cost is big, but you can add two or three targets to two or three skills. I think it adds it to Vexing Blow and Sweeping Cut and Whirling Retaliation and some of the other ones in the other trait lines, and, you know, other classes have similar skill additions, so those can be important. Knowing an AoE skill in the Moors is you know, I think it's as important in any fight, but one consideration in the Moors is that if you're soloing and you're kind of running around with a big group of people that are not grouped, you want to make sure you're tagging as many of those targets as possible to get credit for kills, so that you get, you know, contributions to kills at least, so that you get renown and infamy. You know, commendations and renown. So, you know, whenever I'm soloing and the group I'm with is not grouped, I will typically set off my biggest AoE attack in the middle of the opponent raid, hitting as many of the targets as possible just so I'll get credit if one of them is brought down. Okay, so let's talk about some instance examples where AoE skills are particularly applicable. So I talked about the importance of potentially separating twin combatants using single target or multiple target aggro skills. Like one that comes to mind is Battle for Erebor. You've got the twin trolls that must be separated at the beginning of the fight. If they're next to each other when you're fighting them, they gain, you know, incredible buffs that nobody can live through. I think it's like, you know, plus several 100% damage, you know, given or, you know, 0% taken. So they have to be pulled apart to start the fight. So each tank has to know which target they're going for, has to hit it with a single target AoE, not AoE, a single target aggro skill, and pull it to the side far enough away that you can lock it in with other aggro skills like challenge and so forth, or engage, or fray the edge. Fray the edge is a good single target. It's your highest range of your single target aggro skills for use as a tank. So that's a good one to use in that instance, and the wardens have something that's similar as well. Dharnabhagud, the first fight in Dharnabhagud has a fight that's similar with two trolls that need to be kept separated. The first fight, the first major boss fight in the Lost Temple, has two siblings, you know, one is a warrior and one's a mage, that need to be kept separated or they gain special effects working with each other. You know, there's lots of examples of raid lieutenants in Skrades that have additional effects, like, for example, a Defender of the Vile will make everybody around him tougher to kill. So often you would just single target burn him down first, or you could have a tank pull him away from the rest of the main group so that his buff is not impacting all the other people. So it's different ways of dealing with it, but still important to be able to separate people in advanced instances and fights. There are some critical AoE moments in instances, like, for example, in the Watcher fight in Moria, as you get to the second phase where you're out on the bridge in front of the Watcher, and you burn down some of the large tentacles on either side, there's a moment where a bunch of creeping tentacles blast out of the water and, you know, obliterate any light armor classes on level that are in the area. And in that fight, we would always move all the light armor classes off to the left right before the creeping tentacles came out, and the healer would focus max heals on a champion who would just go to town with AoE skills on the creeping tentacles and burn those down immediately. So that important AoE component in that fight. If you're doing the library at Thamardane is another one that comes to mind. You will lose challenge mode on the final boss fight if you AoE the boss and kill any of the Crebane. So you have to go single target skills completely. You know, a lot of the challenge fights are like that, where you can't burn down any of the adds until the boss is done. So this is a good example of that. But once the boss is finished, then you want to AoE the crap out of all Crebane. So switching over to AoE skills at that point, you know, is important. Another example, if you're soloing the Halls of Night or even with your other players, you know, as the you know, the zombies or whites come out of the gravestones, You not only want to be burning them down, but you want to be killing the gravestones that are or markers that are generating those whites or zombies. So you want to AoE to make sure you're catching the gravestone with your damage at the same time as you're burning down the adds. Otherwise, they'll just keep coming. So that's another example where knowing your AoE skills is important. You know, avoiding mez breaks, an important consideration I talked about already. Almost any raid in Ostdunhoth or Tower of Orthanc raid where mobs have adaptability to avoid crowd control, you know, extremely important to understand, you know, who the LMs are targeting. They have to get two crowd control skills off to control one of those mobs. And if you break the mez after they've established it, after wasting two skills, they don't have another two skills to use to be able to control that mob. They're basically done. And your party's probably done at that point if you're on level. In Samoth Gaul, there are these LMs which have kind of these explosive attacks which knock everybody back and knock some people out of the castle. And mezzing those mobs can be important. Knowing where they're going to be mezzed and not breaking those mezzes can be crucial to a fight. And, you know, using an AoE mez, for example, one example that comes to mind is, you know, Rain of Thorns from the Hunter or Tanglefoot from the, or Roots from the LM. In the Rift fight, there's, a section on the last boss where you're fighting the Balrog where you've got to go into side rooms to close the doors in the side rooms. And, the best way to do it is to use a group AoE mez or root to root the overseers that are in those side rooms and then close the doors and seal them in there so you don't even have to fight them. So, again, important to know your single target mez skills versus your AoE mez skills in that kind of instance. And I think most people at that level do, but still worth mentioning for those of you who have not grouped extensively before. All right. That's the end of my discussion of AoE as a combat mechanic. There was probably more there than most of you thought when we started out. Some of it's obvious, but again, if you're a newer player and you haven't done a lot of grouping, maybe you realized a few important factors that you didn't consider before. So let's move on to our seventh beacon. Halfirion. Well, that brings us to the end of the fourth episode of Light the Beacons. I'd love to hear your plaudits, feedbacks, rants, diatribes, and most of all, your constructive critique. You can contact me at bragsonofbalin@gmail.com. That's Bragg with two A's. The second A stands for apathy. You can reach me on Facebook at bragsonofbalin, all one word, or my website at lightthebeacons.com, where you can post comments directly on the podcasts. Love to hear from you. I kindly request that you take the time to create an iTunes review if perchance you're so inclined. Would very much appreciate it. Would hopefully get me seen by more people out there to subscribe. If your comments would pass the Turbine Code of Conduct policy, I could include them in the next podcast or at least respond to them in some way. So, I hope you laughed either at or with me. I hope you might have learned at least a little something you didn't know before or perhaps looked at the game with a slightly different perspective. Most of all, I hope you enjoy your time this week in Middle-earth. This is Bragg, Son of Balin, signing off. Baruch Kazad! And remember, when the chips are down and someone in your pug tells you to jump in the green water your first time in Carn Doom to earn a deed or title, don't despair. Light the beacons! This week, as part of our outro, I'm going to play a small clip of Middle Earth-themed music from the greatest rock band in history.
Sunlight dances through the leaves, soft winds stir sighing trees, lying in low on grass. Feel the sun upon your face. Elven songs and endless nights, sweet wine and soft, relaxing lights. Time will never touch you here in this enchanted place. Mm-hmm. for many miles. It feels so good to see the smiles of friends who never left your mind when you were far away. From the golden light of coming dawn till the twilight, when the sun is gone, we treasure every season and every passing day.